The Nature Stories podcast, where people and place intersect.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
I'm Samantha Brown. You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast, curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. This week, a piece about the grease trails in northwestern Canada. Yes, I said grease trails, as in fish oil. Once on the brink of vanishing, the trails are being resurrected by a new generation. The piece comes from Stories from the Heart of the Land, the public radio series about the connection between people and the natural world. Here's series host Jay Allison to tell you more.
Teresa Goff lives in Vancouver, Canada. She's an outdoors person and appreciates the land, but not in the same way as the people of the Namgis Nation, a tribe in northwestern Canada. Teresa heard that the Namgis had a particular link to the land, something called the Grease Trails. It's a network of waterways and mountain trails that have been described as the cultural arteries of the Namgis Nation. They're called the grease trails because they were used to transport grease, which is actually the oil rendered from a small local fish called oolakan. Oolakan grease was traditionally of great value, was traded for canoes, blankets, even guns, and it's still a key part of the diet of coastal Indians. Grease is made once a year at best, and it takes about 6 weeks to do it. The Namgis make the grease at a place called Knight's Inlet. It was a long journey for Teresa, but her guide and cultural go-between, Randy Bell, assured her that it would be worth it.
There's many places that we travel in the world to see great things. You know, you see the pyramids in Egypt, and you see the Grand Canyon, and you go to New York and you see the Statue of Liberty and stuff like that. To me, this inlet is like one of those icons of the world. It's just that mind-boggling. At the end of it, you go, wow, I was here. I got to see and witness what making this grease is all about.
Making grease was what I was going to do. That's Randy Bell. He's my guide. I met him soon after I heard about the grease trails. One of the trails starts at Knight's Inlet, the inlet that Randy's talking about. And that's where oolakan return to spawn each year.
We're now leaving for Knight's Inlet.
Porgy's the man that Randy has set up to take me by boat to where the grease is made. I'm going to spend 7 days in a small village at the head of Knight's Inlet. It takes a day and a half to get there. First by plane, then by boat.
How many nautical miles is 7 hours?
I'm Alert Bay, it's about 90-something, I think.
This is a trip unlike any other I've ever taken. It's like going to the cottage with someone else's family, except that family happens to be the Namgis Nation, an entire tribe I've never met before. And the cottage? A sacred site that's centuries old.
And I hope supper's ready.
What had originally piqued my interest about the grease trails were obsidian plates and stone tools carbon dated to 6600 BC. It was the history I was focused on. I'd thought this was all in the past, and that no one did this anymore.
There's a new village over there, a brand new one. They just rebuilt the whole thing. Now it's all modern.
Who lives there?
He's the guy you're going to have to deal with. Bill Glendale. He's the chief there.
I've been told more than once that Bill Glendale doesn't like white people. And Randy made it clear that as an outsider, my trip would require proper protocol. In my bag is a blanket he told me to buy. I'm to give it to Chief Glendale before I leave. We just pulled up to Knight's Inlet, and it's early in the morning. I can hear some birds out there, and it looks like it's already light, so I'm going to go say hi to everybody. I climb over the hull onto the boat beside us, and I enter the cabin and meet Donna and Norman Stauffer.
Norman,
When the tide comes in at 8 a.m., we board a smaller boat and go 5 minutes upriver to the village, where the ulikan are already being processed.
Donna, do you mind explaining what they're doing?
Dumping the ulikans in the pit.
How many ulikan do you think are in that pit?
How many ulikans? No idea.
About 10 people are standing around the pit when I ask this question. And I figure out that Donna does the tally by buckets, not by fish. 25 buckets of ulikan have been dumped in the pit. It's big, about 10 feet by 6 feet and 2 feet deep. On the first day, I sit and skewer ulikans on cedar sticks with Randy. He's already been here a week. And Nicholas. Nicholas has been coming here since he was a baby. He's 7. And I have this idea that people might be more comfortable answering his questions.
Right here. Randy?
Yes?
What are you going to do with the ulikans?
Put them on a stick and then they're going to go in a smokehouse.
Okay. What are you doing now, Papa?
Filleting fish.
You could hear almost anything from the microphone. That was the hearing of sharpening a knife on a wok.
We're sitting next to the Tlina River, and we're picking dead fish out of big metal washing tubs.
I oversee the whole thing and make sure that it's done the way we were taught.
Stevie Beans has been coming to the head of Knight's Inlet to fish for ulikan for 50 years. He says that he learned how to make grease when he was about 16.
We're coastal Indians, and this is our garden, like everything we survived on, like this.
We used to make grease every year with my granny, but now we don't know. We just make grease whenever the ulikans are here. And we don't know when to come. We just come and hope for the best. We still come.
Ulikan numbers have been in a steady decline for a number of years. I'm told that it's because of sea lice, which is a fish parasite. There's climate change, drag netting for commercial fish like prawns. All of these things are having a huge impact on ulikan. But tending to this garden, as Stevie Beans describes it, is what gives coastal Indians their identity. They live off the sea. They come here for the fish. Just like the sea lions and the seagulls, the eagles, and the bears. They all come to the head of Knight's Inlet, the starting point of the Grease Trail.
So where are we going?
We're just going to the start of the trail.
A couple months ago, Randy took me to the section of the trail that goes up and over the spine of Vancouver Island's coastal mountain range.
What we're walking through right now is it's old growth forest.
When Randy's not making grease, and when he's not working at the Namgis band office, he is maintaining these trails, these grease trails.
Is there anything here marking that this is where your people would have stopped?
There are some trees that are marked.
For Randy Bell, land isn't a place, and it's not a concept, and it's certainly not real estate.
When we see that waterfall to the right of us, we know when we're on the right path.
It's a responsibility. Randy Bell's Indian name is Quinquilas, and that's how he's connected to this trail. Quinquilas means thunderbird, and there's a carving of a thunderbird in a yellow cedar at the trailhead.
This is the name I carry. This is where it's from. So for me, it identifies me in a territory.
Identity within a territory becomes important when your land has been confiscated. And not only land was taken. Not too long ago in Canadian history, First Nations children were taken from their parents, and they were put in residential schools.
That's the Namgi side.
This makes me think of Chief Bill Glendale, the chief I'm bringing the blanket to. Back at Knight's Inlet on the second day, Randy takes me to Chief Bill Glendale's cabin. We walk up a plank, open the door, we sit, and we wait. He doesn't show. Inside the cookhouse, I'm told to help with breakfast. I make toast by putting it on a rack on top of a wood stove. It browns really quickly, and then it goes black. I'm told to ring the bell.
Pull it off the pipe.
A huge triangle of metal piping that hangs on the porch of the cookhouse. About 14 men file in to sit down at the table and eat. Donna tells me that a few years ago they had to eat in shifts. She's the one who does the cooking.
I'll take your other plate if you want.
I find my place doing dishes. I do most of the dishes for 7 days, 3 meals a day. It seems like it's one thing that I can do without much trouble. By the third day, I've come to the conclusion that there's absolutely nowhere to go. I could probably count the land in feet. It's small and it's narrow and it's starting to drive me crazy. In my mind, I had imagined elders telling stories. But while here, I've already watched more TV than I ever would at home. One night on the news, I watched Stephen Hawking float in zero gravity, and I remember his computer voice saying that inevitably, one day, we won't be able to live on planet Earth.
You can hear how slushy the mud is. My feet are going about half an inch down.
The rain is relentless. It started the first day I got here, and it hasn't stopped. To make the Oolakan cure quickly, what's needed is sun. Someone brought the rain becomes a common refrain. And it would seem that that someone is me. Whoa! I have just dodged a projectile the size of a cow patty.
I think that was an eagle.
I wonder if it's true that having an eagle defecate on your head is good luck. I'm happy not to find out. Since I left Vancouver, I have been way out of my comfort zone.
Did you get all those fresh words?
Fresh words.
Fresh words.
I was sitting on the porch of the cookhouse one day.
Sorry, I don't know which words you're talking about.
And this guy walked up. I'd never seen him before. And he says, did you get all those fresh words? I have no idea what he's talking about. What are fresh words? Later that same day, I finally meet Chief Bill Glendale. Randy's taken me. Chief Bill Glendale asks why I'm here. I don't know what to say. Collecting words? I try to explain that it's concern over the fish, the environment. He asks me who else I've spoken with, and then when I answer, he tells me that one guy is full of crap. I fall silent. I feel unable to bridge these two worlds with words. Randy has more experience at this.
Because I've lived in the non-native world for a long time in the city, and then lived on reserve now for the last 11 years, the bottom line is we all have to live in the same world. We all need this resource. How can we help each other and sustain it?
If my world and Randy's world don't figure out how to speak to each other, Randy's worries about the Oolakan disappearing might come true.
And so maybe it might be just a story. It won't be actually something we do.
That's exactly what I had thought in the beginning. I had thought that the Grease Trail was already a story, a history. But what I saw at Knight's Inlet was alive. It was precarious, but it was persistent. I make a final visit to Chief Bill Glendale to give him the blanket as my parting gift. He asks, "Who told you we do that?" I say, "Randy." He puts the blanket on the ground. I have no idea what that meant.
This is our last night with Teresa, so I'm going to sing her the Halakhisla song. Halakhisla, Halakhisla, Teresa, Idam, Flint, Dudakur, Halakhisla, Halakhisla.
When I'm in the plane looking out the window, I am absolutely shocked to see clear cuts. Lots of them.
Weather back here looks quite good.
So on the way to Knight's Inlet, I must have missed them. But on the way home, when I look out the window, these huge tracks of trees that have been completely removed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've begun our descent into Vancouver. Please ensure that your seatbelts are securely fastened.
And this makes me think of Stevie and Stella, Randy, and Nicholas, and I wonder what it is that they see when they're at Knights Inlet. Stevie said that this is their garden. And I know that they've been watching over it for generations. They're watching for changes, small and subtle. They're living in the past and the present. They're clinging to something to make sure that there's a future. They're watching what's happening from the ground.
Teresa Goff reports that 300 gallons of grease was made this year at Knights Inlet. It was the first time grease had been made in 3 years. Teresa plans to join Randy Bell, this time with her whole family in tow, to carry the grease over the trail.
That piece was produced for Atlantic Public Media's series Stories from the Heart of the Land. The music was composed and performed by Bill Frizzell. The Nature Stories podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you'd like more information on the series or the podcast, go to nature.org/stories. And join me next week when we hear from writer Charles Bowden about his home ground in the Arizona desert. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.